part of our job is to educate legislators on unintended consequences and to make sure they fully can see the impact of what they're doing.
Welcome to another NFIB California podcast. These podcasts are designed to be a home for California's small business community to gather and learn more information on the pressing issues of the day from the perspective of Main Street, not Wall Street. I'm Tony Malandra, NFIB California's Senior Media Manager, and I want to begin by thanking the California Tax and Budget Research Project for its support of this podcast series. The project is a coalition of small businesses, taxpayers, and service providers raising concerns about imposing a new sales tax on services in California. Our first podcast in the series discussed the Paycheck Protection Program and whether there will be a second round of loans. Our second one talked about Proposition 15, the split roll property tax initiative that would start to undo the protections put into law by Proposition 13 40 years ago. Our third podcast took a look at all the ballot propositions important to small businesses. This podcast will examine an issue that is not on the ballot, but is certain to surface when the next session of the California legislature opens for business in January. And that issue is extending the sales tax to services. You can find all our podcasts on the NFIB California webpage at www.nfib.com/CA or on your favorite podcast app by searching NFIB California. Joining me for this podcast is John Kovatek, California State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business, NFIB, and President of Kovatek Strategies, a Sacramento-based public affairs firm. Welcome, John. Why don't you tell us about today's guest?
Well, thank you so much, Tony. I will tell you that we have a wonderful, wonderful friend and guest here. And this is an issue that small business owners are often talking about, the sales tax on services. My gosh, we already have the highest sales tax statewide in the nation here for products, but extending this to services has been something talked about for some time. Grave concern for mom and pops out there that I hear as the state director of the NFIB Small Business Group. My pleasure to introduce Anthony Pugliese. Anthony has served as the president and CEO of the California Association of Certified Public Accountants since January of 2019. Before that, he served for 21 years at the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants in a number of roles, including the chief operating officer and executive vice president. And before that, he was an audit manager at the highly respected accounting firm of Deloitte & Touche. We're very honored to have Anthony Pugliese with us today. And back to the other Anthony, moderator Tony Malandra, to keep this party going. Tony.
All right. Well, welcome, Anthony. I'd like to begin with a question that I believe needs to be addressed before all others: fairness. Why should businesses that sell us goods have to collect and remit sales taxes to government, but those that provide services don't have to?
Thank you, Tony. And to answer that question in a couple of ways is, I think first and foremost is that companies that deliver professional services do pay sales tax, but maybe it's on other parts of their business. Certainly they pay sales tax for the products and services they buy or products they buy, as well as income tax that they pay on their employees and their business. So there is that. There is a misconception as to that fact that they are paying taxes. They are. And also, I think it's very underestimated the impact of implementing a professional services tax. It's very difficult to determine when and where and how a service was delivered and how you actually derive value that's appropriately taxed. And that can even be the form of nexus. Where, in fact, did the service take place? Did it take place in the state of California? Was part of it done in the state of Nevada, for example? Was part of it done on the East Coast? Certainly larger professional services firms would have more of an issue with that. But the complexities of how to calculate a tax on services and the complexities of how to comply with a law like this are more than daunting. They can, in fact, actually place such an onus on business that it's far more than a tax they're paying, but the infrastructure to support and accurately report a tax come into play. And I think all of that has to be considered. And at CalCPA, we look at not just the effect it has on our own members who have small businesses and large, but also the clients that they serve and how in the world they would actually implement a tax like this. Very different than a point of sale of a good where I buy something, it costs X dollars, I pay a tax on it. It's just very, very difficult to do that in a professional services environment.
John, NFIB represents both people who sell goods and those who provide services. I mean, how often do you hear about the fairness issue?
We hear so much from small businesses about how unfair things are and how small businesses, the mom and pop on the corner, already face such a disproportionate impact when it comes to taxes. I know at NFIB, we've found that small businesses end up paying three times more in compliance of taxes than larger businesses and corporations. Small businesses bear most of the brunt and pay most of the lion's share. And as I said, we pay the highest statewide sales tax, income tax, gas taxes, a high minimum wage. So what we hear from small businesses, Tony, is you're right. You talk about fairness. They say, well, first of all, we're bearing the brunt. It's hitting us hard. We're going through a terrible crisis. They feel like we're doing plenty here. And to extend this is just another example of our policymakers who push this thing to take more money and treat Main Street owners like an ATM.
Anthony, let me ask you, how seriously should service providers take this issue? Is the political will, and more importantly, the votes in the legislature now to place a sales tax on services?
Well, I mean, Tony, very, very seriously. I think it's a matter of, in some cases, of even survival for a small business. If you can think of, I'll use the business model I know and hold dear to my heart, a CPA firm. Think of a small CPA firm and how this would affect them. All the services that they need to have to keep them in business, many times a tax return, tax preparation, a CPA will confer with an attorney. And now the costs for that attorney are going to be higher, which in turn needs to be passed on to the end consumer, the person who doesn't understand all the new tax code and even probably doesn't enjoy doing taxes to begin with, but also the IT services, the payroll services, a myriad of things that CPA needs to do to get his job done well or her job done well. And then you think about if they're getting an increase from their attorney, the attorney in turn is getting an increase from everyone that he or she provides or uses services from. So it starts to create a domino effect that ultimately would make prices so onerous to the end consumer that they may not or will not purchase the services from, in our case, the CPA, but it could just as easily be a small attorney, a small law firm, any sort of professional services firm, HR outsourcing, IT outsourcing, the myriad of impacted businesses where you see a lot of small companies operating would actually become so expensive that they're priced out of the market. And you see a lot of this work simply go to other states. So it is really a matter at its core, sometimes of survival. And the smaller the company, the more heavy the impact is.
John, your people are all over the legislature, especially when it's in session. How seriously should service provider members take this? And who are some of the bigger forces driving this? I think Senator Rob Hertzberg is one. What are the political dynamics shaping up that will make this the issue to be discussed?
I think the issue du jour right now that's got a lot of people on edge right now, of course, is the terrible pandemic that small businesses and frankly, all of us are experiencing right now. Small businesses are dying on the vine right now. And we're doing everything we can here at NFIB, of course, to make sure that we're protecting them, fighting for them, opposing terrible ideas such as this that would really add to their burden. NFIB recently ran a member survey that found that if the economic conditions in California and the nation don't improve dramatically within the next 3 to 4 months, one in five small business owners will be forced to close their doors. So we should be taking this very seriously. We know that we hear this a lot from the accountants out there, the dentists, the barbers, the service providers out there who are very fearful that this will just be one more gigantic brick in their backpack, weighing them down. And so we just know that what we got to do right now and our policymakers, we hope when they return in January, will really focus more on how can we pave the way to really give small businesses the ability to succeed and create jobs and not something like this, which will just set them that further back.
It's been argued that increasing taxes is very bad and certainly new rules and regulations like leave time and things like that. And the legislature seems to pass it anyhow, as if there was nothing going on. So do you think they'll stop at this, or is this just going to be one more thing for them to pass, regardless of the economic condition? Anthony, I'll start with you.
they're dealing with a real problem. I think it's first and foremost is to acknowledge that there is a huge budget deficit, whereas in the last few years, we've enjoyed a surplus. And there's a lot of critical goods, services, education, all those things are impacted by a deficit the size we have right now. And there's no imminent word coming from federal government that we'll have any sort of stimulus or aid at the state level yet. But we firmly believe that this is only going to make the problem worse. And on top of it, we have Prop 15, which would actually create a new tax, again, on small businesses by changing the base value of what they're taxed on for property to market value. And that could be another significant tax. So imagine the small business owner that has held a property in the Bay Area for generations, and they stay in business because they have held it so long. And all of a sudden now, based on Bay Area prices, they're paying taxes on an extraordinarily accelerated market. And that's Prop 15 passes, then something like this passes. That business is just out of business. And it's a problem I'm not sure the legislators understand. And the pyramiding effect of all these taxes being passed down the whole revenue stream, all the way down to the end consumer. And part of our job is to educate legislators on unintended consequences and to make sure they fully can see the impact of what they're doing. So it really isn't a partisan issue. It's really more of a, do you understand what this would actually do? And let them know it does not decrease budget volatility. In fact, by everything that John and I have stated, it actually increases volatility. If you're putting companies out of business, you've disrupted your tax base. So there's just a lot of moving parts. I hope I answered your question with that response.
You did. In fact, you got into the next question, but let me ask John follow up, because my God, you witness the steamrolling effect of the regulatory and tax machine show no sign of slowing this year. So what makes you think that they'd be amenable to an argument that this is really a bad time to extend the sales tax of services, John?
What we have a lot of faith in is, as Anthony rightly said, is the conversation that we would be having to talk about the unintended consequences of increasing these operational costs on small businesses. You know, I think right now what we are finding is that this is not, like I said, we're looking at 1 in 5, 20% of businesses closing their doors if things don't improve economically for small businesses and they get the help they need. I don't think a Democrat or a Republican or an independent policymaker wants to see their Main Street become that much more barren during these terrible times. So what we are finding right now is, you know, I think last year NFIB was successful in defeating and getting the legislature, the bipartisan legislature, to reject about $6 billion with a B in new taxes. California voters, Los Angeles voters, rejected a parcel tax, which was basically a more local version of the Prop 15 property tax increase last year. So we're finding that a lot of voters out there and small business owners just don't have the appetite for taxes. And we're finding policymakers do the same. But as Anthony said, our work is cut out for us. We need to really make sure, and we're going to be doing that, explaining to Democrats, Republicans, and others in these coming months and year ahead, how a sales tax extended to services in the already most highly taxed state in the nation will just do more damage. Whether we're in a terrible pandemic like we are now or not, this is not a good time for us to be setting small businesses further down the hole.
Anthony, let me ask you to expand on something you brought up a minute ago, and that's the issue of volatility. California policymakers for at least 30 years have talked about the volatility in the state's tax system, that we have go through periods of feast and famine. Just let me ask you to expand on the fact that I think the point you made is that extending the sales tax to services would do nothing to smooth out this volatility.
Right. And I base that on the fact that I don't think the ripple effect of a tax on services was well understood. And you know, that's part of our job. And I'm talking today and making sure legislators understand that I think they see this vast market of services being provided. And I think their minds go to very large organizations and they forget the implications of what it does to Main Street America, where our economy sits. Yeah, we have a lot of large companies in California, but we have just as many, well, we have far more small businesses, the Main Street that John mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, that when you start thinking about putting them out of business and disrupting a tax base, you've created so much volatility that there really is no way of understanding the impact. So you approach a problem saying, well, if we had all this money come in as it currently exists, all these revenues, tax it, and then you infuse the state coffers with cash, and there's this simplistic view that that somehow smooths out volatility and that we don't have to have more taxes. But in fact, it tends to do the exact opposite. It introduces taxes into an overly taxed state that then creates a need for consumers to buy from out of state so they can avoid those taxes. So if you can see the ripple effect is it's creating an unstable economic environment in the state, and it actually does the reverse. And that only is well understood when you can see the pyramiding effect and how something as simple as going out and getting your tax return done, going and getting some IT help, trying to get payroll done, all those things go up in price significantly. It makes it impossible to have any margins that are decent. So by creating a tax like that, you've literally created volatility, not lessened it.
John, your state service goes back to the Wilson years, and you remember the volatility issue then. It stayed an issue through the Schwarzenegger and Gray Davis years, and is an issue now. Is there something that would be better for smoothing that out than extending the sales tax of services?
You know, I think there's always an openness to having a discussion about how taxes can, and not just taxes, but fees, levies, and assessments, can be more reasonable for Main Street. The one issue, the irony is, and I think having Anthony on the call here, is the one word that we really hear from small business owners quite often when it comes to taxes is accountability. And I know we got an accountant on the phone, so he gets it. And I know his members and the CPAs out there. But policymaker accountability when it comes to taking that dollar out of your pocket and sending it to Sacramento or Washington, for that matter. We just don't feel that there's enough accountability or transparency about how dollars are spent. We saw the gas tax increase in California, and NFIB was the leading organization, in fact, one of the only organizations to oppose that and to support the repeal of it through Proposition 6, only because what we heard more from small business owners was not only do I feel that that money is not going to be spent responsibly, I don't feel it's going to be spent honestly. And lo and behold, as we saw with the transportation gas tax, it has not been spent as it was promised to be exactly where it is. They've got a lot of pet pork programs that it's now going to. The Proposition 30 sales in income tax increase from many years ago that we also opposed. We opposed it because we don't believe that there shouldn't be any types of the right types of taxes, but we felt there was no confidence that it was going to go where it was. And lo and behold, it has not gone exactly to the kids in the classroom as it should. So it's an accountability issue, Tony. And I think that's why we have such skepticism and fear about something like this, because it's not just something that we hear people saying they need to fill the coffers in Sacramento. We're not exactly sure which coffers they're talking about. Usually it's a personal pet project, and there's just not a lot of trust on Main Street right now.
You know, Anthony, I'm just wondering, to make this saleable, if you're on the side of extending the sales tax services, I'm sure there's some discussion going on, is why don't we rest the California consumer, give them some assurance that, okay, we're going to extend the sales tax services, but we'll lower it on goods, and so it'll be the same tax rate for goods and services. I know that your side still wouldn't support it because it's still a sales tax on services, but have you heard of any deals along this way being thought of, is to make it palatable for the California consumer? We're just going to lower the sales tax on goods so they can better adjust to having it slapped on services, which of course they'll be paying more for services. And I don't know, is there a number? We're already over 8% of sales tax in the state, but I'll just throw some number out there for the purposes of discussion. If we could reach a grand deal where we're going to drop it to 4%, but we're going to extend it to services.
Yeah, I think there has been discussion like that. Let's lower the sales tax and then have a tax on services. I think what gets missed in that discussion is that you truly don't lower. So let's say we did lower sales tax on goods. You don't really achieve that when you look at the fact that everything the service providers who are now being taxed would have to increase in terms of cost and how much the California economy depends on those service providers. So, you know, if you take, for example, you know, I may be paying less at the grocery store or department store, but if I'm a small business owner and I'm trying to recover after this pandemic, or even try to expand, you know, hopefully after this pandemic, and all of a sudden I realize that every single cost that I would need to incur would be dramatically higher than it was before, I'm not sure I've done that person much good, net net. And I think also another flaw in the logic of saying, let's lower the sales tax on goods, but increase it on services or impose it on services, is what I had mentioned earlier, is that pyramiding effect, where I may start by saying, I'm going to call, you know, let's say 3% to all service providers. And then let's start at the beginning of that kind of chain of how that would work. So the first provider, let's say it's an attorney, he's taxed or she's taxed on the services they ultimately provide. But what isn't taken into effect is the increase in their costs and then all the different providers that they bought from to begin with. So if I'm a law firm, I might need some IT help, some HR help. I may need janitorial help. All the different services that aren't currently taxed would then be taxed to that attorney. And then that attorney is going to have to be taxed on their fees. And then all those fees get passed on to the next person in the supply chain. Let's say that's the accountant. The accountant is also paying taxes on all the different things that they're buying. The pyramiding becomes far greater than if we didn't have it at all, meaning the burden is passed disproportionately on to the end consumer, the person on Main Street, the small business on Main Street. So if you were to analyze it that way, I think you'd have to almost go down to no sales tax on goods for that to even become viable. And I'm not sure a study's been done that way. And I don't want to throw that out as a solution, but it really isn't apples to apples to say, we'll lower this by X percentage and we'll increase this by the same percentage. It just has the pyramiding effect again, which will raise taxes more than it would appear on the surface. And there has been work done to kind of propose that argument to lawmakers.
John, would your members take some grand deal for a lower tax on sales tax on goods and in exchange for a new sales tax on services at the same rate, of course?
I don't think so. I think that, again, I think the first conversation we need to have is about honesty and transparency with the taxes that have been sent to Sacramento. We need to do a real deep dive into seeing where these dollars have gone, where the taxpayer dollars have gone. We need to remind our policymakers, and we do it cordially, but we do it firmly, that they work for us and that this is the people's house in the state capitol. There's a great, grave concern that our money, our taxpayer money out there, has been squandered. So we need to have that first discussion, Tony, before we even begin any conversations. But I don't think there's any appetite at all for this kind of a sales tax extended to services. And the one thing I want to mention, I'm sure Anthony can appreciate this too, is especially in these very difficult times, we are finding so many people who have been displaced. Many small businesses have had to, unfortunately, lay people off. We have nearly 15% unemployment rate. And I will tell you right now that what we're finding with a lot of people who have been laid off in their desperation to have money come through the door is they're trying to find jobs and create jobs as entrepreneurs. And many of those are service industry, people creating their own at-home video yoga services, many of them trying to do consulting, many of them turning to become an accountant or some sort of a service industry. So a lot of these businesses that have laid people off, those people are now trying to desperately find and start up service industries. With a sales tax on services, we're essentially telling those people, you've got no place to go. Because many of them have no place else to go because of the lack of products and raw materials out there. They have no place to go. And that is one of the last bastions of hope, is to try find a service industry job, create one of their own. And this idea and this concept would really set them back and actually close that door completely for them.
You know, Anthony, simply tightening our belts and making better choices is wonderful rhetoric, but I don't think it's going to be a persuasive argument for the next legislature. What options would you see? Are there some revenue options other than extending the sales tax of services that you might counsel a lawmaker on?
You know, we get that question a lot. Like, you know, the accounting professional have some, you know, unique way of calculating a way to have a tax or new revenue sources that would make sense. And of course, that argument doesn't always fly with lawmakers in terms of the constituency they represent, whether it would work where they're running for office or statewide. But we would love to sit down with lawmakers and talk about how do we more effectively spend the dollars we have. And that might be tightening our belts, but it also is, where are we seeing results from where taxes are currently spent and where are we not seeing results? The definition of insanity is doing things the same way but expecting different results is something that comes to mind. Is, you know, I don't see where we analyze the results of where our taxes are spent. And I think the most common sense approach is, I don't know if it would cover the entire 11 or growing deficit number we have right now, 11 billion deficit number we have now, but we would have to sit down and understand, where are we spending the money, and is it having anticipated results, and are there new ways of doing things? And I hate to say tightening our belts, because that would imply that we're going to stop a revenue source. But if we just kept things constant and did that, I think we would probably have a different answer, where if we wouldn't have two sides fighting over more and how it's spent, but actually sat down and did a careful analysis. And I know that's easier said than done, but I don't think that's ever been done.
John, same question.
The biggest elephant in the room right now that we need to be focusing on is getting small businesses the ability to have cash flow and to generate cash flow. And again, I would come back to a few other things. I think right now we still are seeing so many small businesses who just are looking for that ability to open their doors again. You know, keep in mind, we still have massive government-imposed shutdowns of small businesses or significantly scaled back businesses. So we got to first focus on how we can get through this pandemic. Everybody's trying to work on this together to find the right reasonable way to get restaurants and auto shops and certified public accountants and all these people back to work in a responsible and safe and healthy fashion, but getting them back to work. So again, I think, as Anthony has rightly said, we're happy to have a discussion. And I think the nice thing is we're going to be beginning a great number of discussions with state senators, assembly members, and others out there on both sides of the aisle saying, look, here's what happens to a small business owner when you do this. But more importantly, you know, we need to talk about things in this crazy environment right now and where people are living on eggshells in fear, to get them going again and to be sure that there's a responsible tax structure, a responsible financial economic structure for our state. That's got to be the first discussion before anybody could even flirt with the idea of new revenues and how to generate those. But we got to find the pathway to get mom and pops back on track.
You know, Anthony, some of our neighboring states will have no sales tax at all on anything, but yet they have a state income tax, and their neighbor could have a sales tax, but no state income taxes. Has there been a state that you think might have gotten it right? Have you seen a state or even a nation that seems to have its tax regimen making sense and working fine?
Let me start by saying the states that have put into place or tried to put into place a tax on services like the one that's been proposed and bantered around in California, if they did that, they were pulled back, they were repealed because of how difficult it was to implement and the cost to implement. I don't know, you know, some states have, Florida is a good example, the state I was born and raised in, where there's no state income tax, but, you know, the majority of taxes are brought in through the tourism industry. That seems to be a model that a lot of people like, because the residents aren't paying the tax, and the tourists are more than willing to pay it. I don't know if that makes it the model that's palatable, but it's probably one that I don't hear a whole lot of criticism about, certainly for Florida residents, to pick that state in particular. Texas has some of the same, no state income tax, but a higher tax for tourism and related entertainment industries, and not to tax the entertainment industry in California, but that seems to be a model. You know, a lot of countries in Europe probably have higher taxes than we do, but you could argue they also offer more services than are offered in California or anywhere else in the United States. So I don't think anyone ever has gotten it right perfectly, or if it has, it's escaping me right now. But a state that maybe comes to mind is Florida, perhaps on some of the ways their taxes are structured. It protects the residents. You don't hear many people say, I hate this comment I get when I tell people I've moved to California. They say, you know, aren't most people leaving California? And that's such a horrible sentiment to hear, is that one of the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful state in the country, yet people are leaving in droves because they can't afford to be here. And we have now taxes on top of everything else to make that problem worse. You probably don't hear that a lot in Florida. Like, everybody's leaving here. Why are you coming in? No perfect model that I can point to, but probably more fiscally sound policies where dollars are managed better and there's more accountability. A lot of states in New England actually look at where money is spent and how well it's been performing. I think some states, people could argue this point, I'm sure, Massachusetts looks at it, New York. There's a lot of states where they discontinue things that aren't working or they reapproach it. I don't see that happening as much here. I wish it would.
John, let me ask you to continue with a final remark, and then we'll give Anthony the final word.
First of all, I would like to say thank you to both Anthonys. Anthony Pugliese, you have been fantastic. We really respect and appreciate not just the work you do at the California Society for CPAs, but all of the accountants out there who are working hard with a lot of our NFIB small business owners to try and help them make sense during these crazy times. You know, we encourage people to really talk to an accountant, talk to a lawyer, talk to an HR professional. I know that sometimes comes with a cost, but there's so many laws and other things coming at a small business owner that really turning to your local accountant is somebody in usually in your neighborhood who can give you some good advice and keep you on the right track. But Anthony Pugliese, we really appreciate you and the time and the effort and leadership on this effort with really doing a more sensible solution than extending the sales tax to services, which would have a backwards effect.
Let's give Anthony the final word on sales tax on services.
I'll start my comments by saying thank you as well. Honored to be on the show and just to talk to you both about all the problems and, you know, mainly for the opportunity to do what I said earlier is to educate everyone about unintended consequences in a state that's already probably overtaxed. I will say probably, not to offend anybody, a state that has too many taxes and is unattractive to business. And this is just one more. And I think person by person, legislator by legislator is the approach on how we stop something like this from happening and think of more reasonable and sound fiscal policy for California that, as John, thank you for the welcome to the state. I hope there are many more behind me and we stop the exodus from happening. Thank you for the opportunity to represent CalCPA and our 45,000 members and, you know, just the businesses across the state that are facing the same problem as our profession is. Thank you.
In closing, I'd like to thank once again the California Tax and Budget Research Project for its generous support of these podcasts. I'd also like to thank MultiPoint Content Strategies for its production of these podcasts. You can learn more about them at multipointstrategies.com. And thank you to our listeners. If you liked what you heard, please share this episode, subscribe, and give us a thumbs up. For more information, please visit the NFIB California webpage at www.nfib.com/CA or wherever you get your favorite podcasts by searching NFIB California.